Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's Tim Brown, the host of Farmcast for the Community. Obviously, we're here at the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy, and I want to remind everybody that in next month in May for Farmcast, I'm bringing on someone that works in dermatology. It's a well-qualified pharmacist who works with a dermatologist in Atlanta, and she's going to talk to us about skincare, screening, but also how to use sunscreens. And there's some new recommendations out there that you need to hear about. I know we're already in that part of the year where it's getting warmer. I know people are already been on spring break, but we're going to continue to vacation. It's always smart to make sure that we take care of our skin. But before we get to May, we have Dr. Eileen Kennedy here for the month of April, which is Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month. Boy, that's a lot to say. Dr. Kennedy is the Dr. Samuel Benedict Professor in Pharmaceutical and Biomedical Sciences here at the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. She specializes in drug design and developing novel types of inhibition for a variety of diseases, including Parkinson's disease. So suffice to say, she's a very intelligent lady, and she's been kind enough to give us some time today to talk about Parkinson's. Many people out there suffer from Parkinson's disease, and I was just saying earlier to a friend of mine, this is one of my greatest fears, because it really takes your ability away to function and do things that you really enjoy. And I wanted Dr. Kennedy to come on board and talk today about what's going on in the field of research, but also how to manage Parkinson's disease and the drugs that we have available that's out there. Welcome, Dr. Kennedy. How are you?
Great. Thank you very much for having me today.
Absolutely. I know that this is an area of research and looking at novel inhibition, those things. But before we get there, can we just tell the group Parkinson's disease, actually, what happens with that? How does Parkinson's disease come about?
Yeah, so it's a neurodegenerative disease, and there's a portion of your brain that regulates your movement and balance, coordinated, you know, muscle movement and stuff as your body moves. And so there's signaling that happens with it. There's a molecule that gets made by certain neurons that will have activity on other things. So there's this important molecule called dopamine, and that will act on the brain to help with the signaling pathway to coordinate all the sorts of movement. So what happens in Parkinson's is that you start getting death of some of these neurons. And so we don't exactly know what triggers this disease to onset, but we see that we'll get death of those neurons, we get reduced amounts of that molecule called dopamine, and so then we get lower levels of that for signaling. And what happens is you get misregulation, and ultimately it results in a lot of the physical phenotypes that we know occur in Parkinson's.
So like neurons, the cells of the brain, right? They just die, or they just stop working?
They'll start dying. So there's going to be different pathways that are activated that ultimately lead to death of those neurons. And that will lead to loss of this molecule being produced. And then it can't signal like it normally does. That ultimately allows us to start having problems with motor function.
Got it. So basically the brain cells stop making dopamine, and then our muscles react because it just can't do its job. It can't figure out if it should move or not move.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like it happens over a period of time, though. In other words, I don't wake up on a Monday and have all the symptoms of Parkinson's. It sounds like it sort of is progressive. How would you know early on if maybe Parkinson's is something you should be worried about? What early symptoms do you normally see?
So Parkinson's is difficult to diagnose because you may not have symptoms for a long time. It may be going on for, you know, a decade, 2 decades before you start realizing that there's something going on. And typically when they diagnose it, they try to find that you have loss of at least two of your major primary motor functions. So having your ability to move, you should start moving quite a bit slower. You might have issues with balance where you're falling more. You mm-hmm. can start having muscle tremor, so like shaking of your arms, and also just muscle rigidity, so challenges with that. And so to be diagnosed, so that you need to have two of those, but you might have one of those beforehand, you know, for a long period of time without any other symptoms. Another common effect is having loss of smell. And so you might just have that also as another type of phenotype. And so having these different symptoms would be something where they can kind of tentatively diagnose you as potentially having Parkinson's.
So let's face reality, I'm getting older. I already move slower. You know, when I go into my primary care provider every year for my physical and I say, you know, I'm moving a little slower or I don't smell as well as I used to. Is there a test they can run on me to like tell me if I have Parkinson's or not? Or is it just one of those things of like, wait and see if the traditional symptoms show up?
The big thing would be loss of motor functions. They can do brain scans and activity, but there are, you know, difficult things to identify in brain changes. And so there isn't a great diagnostic for it at this point.
That's just scary in itself. So really you're kind of watching yourself or watching your loved ones to make sure that you see these symptoms early on, right? I mean, and it sounds
and you like- might, you might have one of these symptoms and it could very well be just another, you know, benign neurodegenerative type of thing that's occurring with age. And so, you know, it's good for the doctor to kind of just tease those apart and see if they can diagnose that towards Parkinson's or if it's just something else.
Got it. So don't be afraid to speak up. Don't blow it off and go, oh, I'm just getting old, so I'm moving slower. Yeah. You want to mention this. Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things that I'm concerned about is what you just mentioned is there's no way really to screen for it. And it sounds like the symptoms may not be something that I think about or discover until they become pretty significant. So do the symptoms get, like once I get to the tremors or I lose my balance, does it just sort of stay there or do I get worse the longer that I have Parkinson's?
It's progressive, so it will continue to get worse as you age. But again, this can happen over spans of decades, so it can, you know, not be necessarily a fast progression where you'd get a mass amount of symptom changes. And, you know, in the meanwhile, they will try to control the symptoms that are occurring from it. But even if you have a relative that had Parkinson's, like your parents, for instance, have had Parkinson's, so you might be at increased risk. They can look for genetic changes in you and whether you may have those. And it can maybe, you know, highlight that you might be at increased risk of having Parkinson's, but there's no way to prevent it from progressing, even if you know that you have that familial link. So you'll just have to wait for the onset of symptoms at this point.
You know, that's a good discussion point that if you know you have somebody in your family, parents or grandparents, that's something you should let your primary care provider know, your past history with your family, so they can start watching and making sure. What's the average age of onset or discovery of Parkinson's? Do you know by chance?
Actually, I'm not quite sure. I think it's in the 50s.
All right. So really you start to look when you're in your 40s going into your 50s and making sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a subcategory that can even develop it in their 30s or so. So there's
I think of Michael J. Fox, right? He was early in his. Yeah. So I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm through my 30s and I don't have tremor, so I must have Parkinson's. But it can occur 40s, 50s, into the 60s. So to really screen and make sure that your primary care provider's talking to you about these things. It's just because, as you talked about, the brain cells are dying off. They're not making dopamine. There's no cure for Parkinson's, right?
There's no cure for Parkinson's. There's only right now we can treat symptoms is all.
Oh, and so it sounds kind of easy, right? Treat it. I'm just going to give dopamine back to the body. Is it that easy just to give dopamine back to the body to sort of make up for those brain cells not making anymore?
It's not that easy because it's very complicated. You have those neurons that made the dopamine and those are dead. And so we lose kind of that normal signaling that's going to be happening in this portion of your brain. And that portion of the brain happens to be regulating the control of all your, you know, motor forces and balance and so forth. And so that makes it very difficult to fully engage that. And it will only continue getting worse over time. But we can replace that with not dopamine itself, but a synthetic analog. And so that would be the treatment that we give for patients.
You know, you just went to scientist, researcher, in PhD, a synthetic analog. So basically we make the drug in a lab that looks like dopamine and we give it back.
It looks like dopamine and it acts almost like dopamine. But the problem is if we gave you regular dopamine and you took that pill and it goes into your body, we can't get it. We need to get it into the brain. And what happens with dopamine is it can't cross what's called the blood-brain barrier. And so it would stay outside of the brain. And so they've designed this compound that looks almost like dopamine and it can cross the blood-brain barrier. And so now we can get delivery to the brain to allow that kind of signaling to happen where it needs to happen.
And that's levodopa, right? That's levodopa that many people may know about. And your point really well taken. Levodopa is kind of a gentle soul. It doesn't really ward off. It can be metabolized pretty quickly, broken down pretty quickly. So they put it with another drug called carbidopa, right?
That's correct.
And those two drugs are kind of the mainstay for replacing dopamine-like substances in Parkinson's disease and to stop the symptoms if they can, right?
That's correct, yep.
I know just from my reading prior to us doing this that this drug comes in a lot of different forms and it is the cornerstone, right? I think most people are familiar with Sinemet. That's the brand name.
Yep.
And so you take this to make the symptoms go away, but unfortunately, it doesn't last all day long. You have to take it multiple times a day and a lot of times, right?
That's correct. So it's about 3 to 4 times a day where you would take this for management.
Wow.
So usually a few pills at each of these doses.
So let's say that I'm taking 3 or 4 times a day, but I'm not so good at that, right? I forget a dose or I'm a little late with the dose. Are there things that I can use in between that to help me keep the shaking and the tremors to a minimum?
Yeah. And so what they in Parkinson's, what they look at is how well your symptoms are being managed over time. So you have these on periods when the drug is active and you have lower tremors and so forth. And then they have an off period to see if you were taking the drug every 6 hours or so. Say by 4 hours, your tremors start returning. So that would be an off period. And at that point, there's several different drug classes that have come out towards that to try to help with that. So one of these, for instance, is the COMT inhibitors. And so these inhibit the breakdown of levodopa. And so it inhibits this particular enzyme called catechol-O-methyltransferase, the COMT.
That's that COMT. That's where the COMT comes from, right? Whatever it inhibits, that's what we're going to call it, COMT.
Yeah, so COMT inhibitors, and that helps you essentially to have a little bit more activity of the levodopa when you take a dose, and so that can extend the time that you take with it. So there's one new formulation of levodopa that comes with that mixed in together with it. It's called Stilevo, and so that will have levodopa, carbidopa mixed together with this COMT inhibitor, and so you get a little more activity to try to minimize your off time between the dosing.
So that's kind of smart, right? I've got a drug that breaks down pretty quickly, but I give another drug that inhibits the body from breaking it down, and I let the drug stay around in my body longer by putting the two together. So the COMT doesn't add dopamine or anything. It just makes the dopamine last longer.
Exactly.
And so you see a lot of people, and I think, where's some, is it Ongentys? That's one of them, right? And then Comtan and Tazmar are the brand names that many people may hear out there in the community. The Ongentys one is the one that was just approved, and you don't have to take it so often. I think it's just once a day or something like that.
Yep, that's correct.
I like that idea of keeping my Sinemet and then adding a blocker so the Sinemet works longer. I don't have to take it 5 times a day versus, you know, 3 or 4 times. That's a good idea. I like that.
Because a common problem with Sinemet is you may take this for years and it may be working fine. And then the longer you're taking it, you're getting less and less activity out of it. And so you're needing to take it more often, higher dosing, that type of thing. So these are things that can help kind of extend the activity for your on time where you're having reduced symptoms.
That makes sense. I like that. What other classes are out there that sort of help, I guess, with the dopamine staying around?
So another big class is called MAOB inhibitors. And so these block the breakdown of dopamine inside the brain. So you already have some level of dopamine that your body can still produce, although it's lower now once you have Parkinson's. And so this can help that have a longer time of it being around for activity. So there's several compounds in this MAOB inhibitor class. So some of the brand names for it are Zadago, Azelect, and Selegiline. And all of these will have different dosings too. So, you know, once or twice daily or so, where it's not too significant, but that is now dependent on the levels of dopamine that your body's naturally producing.
Right. I think a lot of people are probably familiar with Selegiline. It's been around for a long time. Yeah. I think with that group though, there's some pretty significant drug and food interactions. So if you're on one of those, you're thinking about that, you know, with a family member, make sure you guys talk about to your pharmacist about what drug interactions and food interactions are out there with those MAOBs. Selegiline being probably the most popular. What's another class?
So we also have anticholinergics. And so you have
that's another a big old word. Anticholinergic. What the heck? What do these do?
So there's another neurotransmitter that's in your brain called acetylcholine. And so that'll have activity and it's normally produced at a level that's going to be kind of on, you know, on par and balance with how much dopamine your body produces. And so if you now suddenly you're producing less dopamine, but you have a lot of cholinergic activity from acetylcholine, then you can kind of mask the activity of the dopamine that's happening. And so by lowering the by taking an anticholinergic, we're lowering that acetylcholine activity. And so you're able to get more restorative activity out of the dopamine that's present.
So basically, we've got a balance like this where the acetylcholine is really, really working hard and we got low dopamine. And these come in, they try to make the balance come back into play.
Exactly.
It makes sense. So I know with those, though, you have to be careful because it causes some urinary problems, some constipation, and some dry mouth. So not everybody likes those. But I remember those are older drugs, too. So they're affordable. They're easy in terms of money. And then there's a new class that just came out that I was reading about last night, right?
Yeah, so there's the adenosine A2A receptor antagonist.
Can they just make these simple? I swear to goodness. A2A receptor antagonist. So it inhibits, it's an antagonist.
Yep. And so you have another signaling in your brain by this other molecule called adenosine. And so again, by dampening the signaling that's happening through adenosine, we can get more signaling from dopamine.
Oh my gosh.
Another way to try to boost the activity of the dopamine that's present in your brain.
So this is all about keeping the chemicals in the brain balanced and giving the body back one of the chemicals that's no longer being made as much as it once was.
Yep.
So all we're doing is trying to get the body back to, excuse this term, a normal state.
Yeah, so that we kind of get back to that normal firing pattern of activity and stimulation of the brain, and so that we can have these coordinated movements happen again and so forth. And so with that A2A, there's this one compound called Noryanz, and so it just got approved in 2019. And so it's a new one, and it's like a once a daily type of thing that you can perhaps take with other things.
So you're going to look at something like Sinemet, something like Ongentys or Comtan, and then this Noryanz is a newer one, and then possibly an anticholinergic. The MAOBs, they're not used as much any longer, are they? Are they still used a great deal?
They're not used as much anymore.
Because of the drug interactions, I bet, yeah.
Yeah.
So this sounds like if you have Parkinson's, you're caring for someone with Parkinson's, there's quite a few medications someone has to take on a daily basis. Is that fair?
It is, and it's often dosing. So, you know, some of the ways that they're trying to look at with levodopa, for instance, if you have to take it multiple times a day, there might be times when you have significant tremors and you're not able to, you know, swallowing is something that will get worse as the disease progresses, and you may have trouble swallowing the number of pills that you would need to do, you know, three pills, you know, three, four times a day. It ends up being very difficult for some patients.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at some of the newer deliveries now that have gotten approved. So some of these, you can take a pill that dissolves under your tongue. There's a oral inhaler that you can take as a powder. A challenge with that, though, that we were just talking about earlier is that you have to open these pills, put them into the inhaler one at a time, and you have to take two of them. And so you have to be able to have that, you know, motor dexterity to get that done. And so that can be also difficult for patients to administer to themselves, and they might, you know, need the requirement of an assistance, but it can help with the swallowing challenge.
Yeah. If you can't swallow. Don't get me wrong, Dr. K. I love this idea of not having to use the pills and using something like an inhaler, but I have to think to myself, I have my tremors. They're obviously worse now because that's the reason I want to use the inhaler, and I have to somehow break open a capsule and get all the little powder into something while I'm shaking like crazy. Mm-hmm. So I would guess that the majority of people with Parkinson's have folks that can help them out or have to help them out because they couldn't do all this on their own.
That's true. Yep. And there's also issues with GI transit, so how fast the food will move through your intestines and so forth before you can clear it. And as that, you know, progressively will get worse as the disease progresses. They also have new administration called Duopa, where you can have it as a gastrotomy tube for entrance of the drug to deliver to. So there's different ways that I guess it can kind of overcome issues as, you know, the disease progresses or your level of, motor function at that point.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, obviously tremors are the part that most people associate with Parkinson's. It's what I think about when you say it. And I think of Michael J. Fox, and when he's been on TV and he's talking, and I watched his head move a bit and his hands move. But the way you're talking is there are other symptoms that I guess we don't hear about as much in the media. One is the swallowing you just mentioned. It gets harder to swallow. Why is that?
Just, you have muscle control through all of these sorts of program, you know, these different things that you want to do with body movement. And so eventually you'll start losing the ability to have the sort of, you know, coordinated muscle contraction and so forth that would naturally occur with this.
If we're using all these drugs, does it delay those kinds of things happening?
They don't delay it. So that will still continue on with progression as you lose those neurons in your brain. As they continue dying, this disease will just continue progressing forward.
So I think, you know, as much as I hate to say it, it's sort of that know where you're headed kind of aspect. So the sooner you know, you can kind of make plans and those things. You talked a bit about stomach not doing what it should. Are there any other symptoms that maybe people would not associate with Parkinson's disease that are common?
Yeah, some common symptoms also just having confusion, having ability of doing tasks. So the processive level of doing things in a particular order as a task can be really difficult. Even having judgment of, you know, making decisions about things can be difficult to do as the disease progresses with patients. Multitasking is really difficult. And also, you know, other aspects, depression, you know, your quality of life is a lot more difficult. There's different things. It's also hard on the family. And over all, that's a major major concern with patients as it progresses. And also pain, you'll have a lot of body pain and different forms, nerve pain and so forth that can occur as it progresses.
So nerve pain, you can be somewhat depressed. So there are going to be other managements that need, so we have the drugs for Parkinson's, but it sounds like the motor function.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you also need to think about other medications in this situation too. So is it unusual to have someone on drugs that help with depression or drugs that help with nerve pain? Is that kind of common with those?
It's extremely common because it's a very, you know, broad symptomatic disease, and there's a lot of management that's involved. And I think, you know, there's definitely, you need to talk with your doctor, be open with them about all these concerns and changes you're having, and, you know, whatever help that you need, because that's what they're there for. And, you know, we have a lot of great, you know, different drugs that specifically deal with antidepression, as well as just having, you know, counseling sure. and, you know, group therapy type of things. There's all sorts of different, you know, support mechanisms of people that are undergoing similar changes.
That's really a good idea. I'm sitting here, I'm overwhelmed thinking about being given this diagnosis and kind of knowing what's coming over the next 10 years. And I think a counselor and family members and those kinds of things, that to me sounds it's just as important as any medication out there. That to me would be the cornerstone in my world of keeping myself sane. For anyone in my world, myself or anybody I love, and you know, just because you know it's not going to be an easy path as time goes by. Oh my gosh. I know we've talked a little bit about the medications that we use don't cure Parkinson's. I also know the Michael J. Fox Foundation has done a great deal of research, and I know you have done a great deal of research. Is there anything that we can talk about that is, I won't say cutting edge, but maybe something that really has been uncovered recently that would help us get to the point where we might be able to either manage Parkinson's better, or if everything's there, cure someone with Parkinson's?
Yeah, and so I'm funded through Michael J. Fox Research Foundation, and so they fund, you know, lots of groups throughout the world, and it's really an amazing network of research and literally international that will open information. They have meetings every single week, and so we can all log in and meet with each other, see cutting-edge research as soon as it's being produced, before it's published, see what directions we're heading in, and I think big areas that people are trying to look at are uncovering the disease. You know, what starts the disease? Are people more prone to it in certain populations or not? You know, what are those differences that leads them to that? Are there biomarkers that we can use to try to predict who might develop Parkinson's over time? You know, and then the idea is that we can go into the early intervention if we could try to stop that disease from progressing. So there's a whole other aspect of therapeutic development of looking at some of the main enzymes that get misregulated in Parkinson's. How can we downregulate those activities?
Basically like a 23andMe for Parkinson's, like you can do my genetic makeup and see if I have anything that sort of signals that I may be like on the pathway to my my brain cells not doing what they should be doing.
We're trying to develop that, but it's not there yet. But I think that, you know, we will hopefully see that in the near future. And I think also looking at new ways so that if we can try to look at these enzymes that are starting to dysregulate early on in the disease and stop it from having that activity, we might block your body's progression of that as it continues on and block people from having.
So for those out there, enzymes are kind of like these little chemicals in our body that chew things up and help us make things, and it breaks stuff down, but they're like proteins. But it sounds like if we can identify, because the body's so complex, so you're trying to figure all that out. Are there any new medications or therapies that you've heard about in these groups that sort of might make it easier to manage part? Because right now we just talked about the fact that there's a lot of dosing and a lot of pills in this. Anything that's maybe coming up that's cutting edge and when it comes to therapy?
Yeah, they're definitely exploring all sorts of areas. You know, we kind of talked about different drug classes. These all have different mechanisms of action. So, I mean, I think that's still a big area of research. Can we find other ways to help manage symptoms, you know, better, especially as the disease progresses or you have less responsiveness to the current drugs that are available? Having a whole new drug class can, you know, open those possibilities, but also just trying to stop it dead in its tracks if we can identify those changes early on and have a really potent inhibitor for that one target. And that would be a way to stop that. And so that's, you know, all big areas of research right now. So
got it.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that we'll see something like that in the near future.
Yeah. You know, for those that have relatives with Parkinson's disease, you know, that's the generation I think about, right? Screening, looking for, and then the grandkids and the great grandkids and seeing what's out there. That's just incredible to think about sort of looking at our roadmap of our body and trying to figure out if my roadmap's different than yours and like where I'm headed versus where you're headed. Yeah. You know, Dr. Kendi, we've covered a lot, and Parkinson's is hard to talk about because there's no sunshine ending to it. There's no, oh, we're going to get this under control. It does lead to some problems over time, obviously, but I really want to leave the listeners with three tips or three pearls to maybe make their life as easy as possible. Or if you're a caregiver working with someone with Parkinson's, to help you understand or maybe help that person with regard to their illness. Can you give us three pearls, that something that we've talked about today that people need to tune into?
Yeah, I think something that, you know, is important to know is that there are a lot of drug classes. There's a lot of drugs available. There's a lot that have just come out in the last 2 or 3 years. Talk to your doctor, find out what's out there. If you're not responding well to a drug, we can definitely probably identify other drugs that you might have much better responsiveness to keep your symptoms at bay. Also, you know, it's a very global effect that has really significant effects on the quality of your life. And, you know, mental health is a major concern that we see really strongly with patients. And it's important, just talk to your doctor. If you're upset, if you're depressed, you know, just, it's okay to have those feelings and express to them, you know, work at ways that how we can manage that. And also for your caregivers and family, you know, it affects everybody really. And it's something that's, you know, there's no shame in talking about having those kinds of feelings and just working through them so that they can be managed. And I think lastly, you know, there's a lot of great people that are really putting a lot of effort into trying to figure out ways that we can try to have a cure for this or have some sort of treatments where we can at least slow that progression down. And I think that, you know, there's definitely hope for a brighter future that's going to come out soon. And I think, you know, we all just need to keep striving towards that. And
right.
That
we can. I like those a lot. I love the fact that we talk about talking to your physician, your pharmacist, know what's out there and what's new. Also, if things aren't affordable, talk about what programs are out there to help you afford them, because there's some programs out there to help people get these medications from the drug companies and pay less money out of pocket. Because I know these can be very expensive, these new ones that we're talking about. I love the aspect you talked about, holistics. Don't be afraid to talk about mental health, counseling, family members, everybody, because I would imagine this can really drain financial resources and just your energy. I mean, your outlook. I love all that. I want to say thank you. I know you're incredibly busy. I know you spent a great deal of time researching and looking at this particular disease. And I want to say thank you again for spending time with us here on Farmcast for the community and bringing us up to speed on where we are with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. For everyone listening out there, please keep in mind that in May, we're going to talk about dermatology and sunscreens and those kinds of things. But also with Parkinson's disease, realize that the Michael J. Fox Foundation actually has a lot of literature and a lot of aspects out there that you can read about on your own and refer back to. But I think the take-home message is, don't forget to talk to your primary care provider, your pharmacist, and other healthcare providers to make sure they know what's going on in your world, because things are changing rapidly. And because of that, we want to make sure you get the best treatment or the best management for you. Until May, until next time, I'm Dr. Tim Brown, your host for Farmcast for the Community. Thanks so much, everyone. Go in good health.